My dreamy, cloud-wrapped partnership is a happy, sappy mix of more than enough time to debate and process all the possibilities. It assumes equal commitment and responsibility for the outcomes, and it is impractical and awkward at best. In fact, my dreamy idea of partnership has been a complete and utter failure. So let's not do that, okay? Instead, I suggest we start from scratch, or at least as close as we can after almost 10 years of ministry together. There are some assumptions and realities that need to be named today. At the heart of a relationship between a minister and a congregation is indeed partnership. Ministers are called and the congregation's leaders are elected to work together for the good of the whole and to serve the greater mysteries of love and justice together. I cannot think of another arrangement quite like it. Because of this unique sharing of power, how we organize ourselves is different from typical hierarchical religious communities. Here, every member's voice does matter. And at the same time, we must find ways to move forward beyond our own differences. We really do need leadership and its cooperative other half, fellowship, for partnership to thrive. In this system, we take turns leading and following. It is a dance of mutual respect and accountability, and it is occasionally a train wreck. But it is our beloved train wreck. This shared ministry has theological roots that go back as far as the pilgrims who urged us to live in accountable and a covenantal community, and the transcendentalists who urged us to listen to that small voice, that inner light, the holy in each and every person. Yet all too often, we regress from these ideals into thinking about the shared relationship as a consumer-driven business. Sometimes, we get so caught up in our individual rights, we forget that with these rights comes responsibilities, responsibilities to the whole. This is entirely understandable, because just about everything in our culture is defined these ways. Yet it simply doesn't fit the reality of congregational dynamics and our ideals of interdependence and mutual respect. Being people-driven and relationship-driven, we accomplish what we can based upon who is willing and able to show up. When we, quote-unquote, fail at our goals, most often it is because of very human factors, like conflict, or illness, and loss, or needing to take care of ourselves and our families. Tending to these human needs and crises is a big part of who we are. We are at heart a caring community. Being willing to live within a covenant of caring relationships takes every single one of us to show up for it. We have to show up, we have to listen and care for one another, show up and use our voices and votes and powers for the good. Because of this high expectation of our participation, our responsibilities to one another carry some real weight. The responsibilities of membership are as serious as the rights of membership in a beloved community organized around democratic and cooperative principles. As we sort out our everyday issues that being in community certainly raises, it really does matter who is in the room and what they're feeling or sensing and experiencing. Their individual stories have meaning, and that meaning influences the meaning-making of the whole. The bottom line is that each of us does have the power to influence this congregational system if we stick with it. My question to each of you is, how will you use your powers for the good of this shared ministry? Will you, if you can, and the time is right, step up to elected leadership? Or to answer today's stewardship conversation question, will you affirm the good you see around you and add to the well of kindness and hopeful possibility here? Will you wield your criticisms with kindness and care so as to help and not harm? Only you know the answers. It is your path and your story. The reality of a community built on covenant and partnership is so very different than the passive consumer, money-driven one of the dominating power over model. My hope for co-ministry for next year, and hopefully longer, is that we all get a better look at the possibilities that a partnership can unleash. Here are some of the realities I am aware of today that might be addressed by seeing who we are through a different kind of lens. As a congregation, we are experiencing something that's happening to congregations all over the country, increasing difficulty in recruiting volunteers and board and other leadership roles based upon our current expectations of those jobs. Can we together envision another way to organize that would be more doable and attractive to those with the skills and interests to serve? If we want to, can we even create an organization that is explicitly anti-racist and organized to promote something other than white normative practices? These are adaptive challenges that require long, deep conversations where we all stay at the table long enough to figure out a new way of being. It is a big, challenging reality that is influenced by the world around us. And as we refocus ourselves on relationship and covenant, I imagine we might want to do other things differently. Where can creativity and collaboration generate more energy and therefore expand our ministries? A model of partnership that is creative, messy, and not perfect, but really interesting, might help us all to better live into this faith right now. And to be honest, I have to say that I'm aware that my own energy is just different now in my 60s compared to my earlier years in ministry. I know my family has given up a lot of my attention for the 29 years I have served congregations in some capacity. And to be fair, we've also gained a lot. But I am looking to shift some of that energy in my life, now while my very young grandchildren still seem to want to be around me. So this journey in our ministry together, and hopefully into co-ministry, is another step in a much longer, greater, deeper story that any one of us can fully imagine. We're part of an ever-evolving faith tradition that is grappling right now with its own white supremacy culture. We are struggling to undo the patronizing and silencing of those on the margins that has been our pattern for too long. I want to be part of that challenging untangling. But like everything else, I cannot do it alone. Only all of us together have even half a chance at it. As we speak, our old UUCMC self is changing. In order to shape that new self, we will need to ask each other some real hard questions. Will we have to center the voices on the margins? Will we have to listen to each other, stay at the table, and give honest feedback along with hearing the meanings in the silence? The love we try to embody, the tradition of inquiry, respect for all, and the freedom to be who you are, only keeps on evolving. The outward forms may shift, but the heart of the good we carry out only gets stronger. Albert Schweitzer wrote, "The path of awakening is not about becoming who you are. Rather, it is about unbecoming who you are not." So there's a shedding of old ways that must occur in order for us to grow. Most spiritual journeys begin with a leaving, a separation, or at least a decision to change, and this one is no different. I would be lying to you if I didn't say that there is some loss for me in this new way. There's a little mourning along with the excitement of trying a new way in ministry. For me, it's the unbecoming of a solo minister. That's hard work. The seeing and changing systems is unsettling too. But you know, I think we are up to the challenge. The most important reality I can name today is this. I cannot imagine better partners than each of you for this new chapter in our journey. Every person who has the courage to stand up and lead, our wonderful staff I get to work with, who give their level best day after day in service to this congregation's ideals, and each of you and every congregant who gives of themselves to make a shared, caring, and welcoming community happen. And Reverend Craig, partner and a colleague in ministry to bounce my ideas off of and my frustrations with, to share the joys and sorrows of it all with. I know that all these partnerships make me a better person than I would ever be without them. And that's a great place to start.
I've been doing some reading on co-leadership. At its root, what allows for its fruits to be had is something seemingly obvious, but actually quite profound. You have to want to do it. You have to believe that there are other ideas out there, that you aren't the sole source of what might work. You have to want to improve yourself, to be willing to be a part of a team, to give others the right to have your back, to strive toward goals held in common. Co-leadership requires that you listen to and allow others' views to sharpen your own, with the assumption that the facts at hand are accessed in more complete ways, taking into account the opinions of other people with whom you are in community. But for any of it to work, you have to want to do it. Let me say very plainly, I am truly excited about the prospect of entering into an experiment of co-leadership with Reverend Virginia and all of you here at UUCMC. I want to do it. So once there's a will, the benefits of co-leadership flow if the leaders can model the kind of partnership that should exist throughout the body, in our case, the congregation. Acts of co-ministry demonstrate the belief that people are better together, that listening to one another, collaborating on projects, and coming to compromises that take into account multiple viewpoints is at the core of what makes a congregation a community of purpose. In my work with youth groups over the years, I continually have asked, what makes us more than a collection of high schoolers? What allows disparate people to become youth group, an entity greater than the sum of its parts? The answer, surely true for a congregation as well, is covenant. Agreements specifying ways we will behave with one another, how we will move forward in the face of disagreement, forging on through even disruptions of our covenantal vows to compromise and joint resolve. Covenant requires that our values begin and end in partnership, integrity, and personal worth. When the story we tell about ourselves is one not only of what we do, but of why and how we do it, our congregational body transcends what is specific to each of us, demonstrating that what makes us us isn't so much a quantity to be measured, but a quality of relationship to be lived. In the past, I've likened congregational life to a beehive. In Honeybee Democracy, Thomas Seeley writes that a colony of honeybees is far more than an aggregation of individuals. It is a composite being that functions as an integrated whole. This imagery resonates with the mosaic of community achievable in a caring congregational setting. A congregation with compromise and collectivity at its heart profits by having communication and mutuality mirrored in its leadership. Co-ministry is a reminder of what distinguishes us to begin with, that here we join with others who may well have cultural ways, beliefs, creedal imperatives, ultimate allegiances very different from our own. Unitarian Universalism cannot pick and choose from the traditions and commitments of the individuals that comprise it, but must employ all comers. Our faith movement is not a pick and choose from options, but an immersion in the totality of everything that each of us brings into our worship services, into our social activities, and into a vision for the world around us. Our theological commitment as a faith community is to foster processes of transformation and negotiation on behalf of all vulnerable lives. When we allow ourselves to collaborate, we free ourselves from the silos of our already proven expertise and open ourselves to discovering energy and creativity to build new ways forward together. It takes all of us to be us. The theme of this summer's General Assembly of UU Congregations in Spokane, Washington, is the power of we. UU President Susan Frederick Gray wrote this month, "We don't create any real positive impact alone. Community gives us strength. Love gives us courage. Remembering we are not alone, remembering the people, the family, the community, the ancestors we belong to, gives us resiliency and power to keep on loving, keep on acting, keep on working for the values and commitments we hold dear." This focus on the collective is in sync with what has become a preeminent goal of our faith movement, as Reverend Virginia remarked, that of dismantling white supremacy culture. When we spread power sideways away from hierarchical leadership, we can center voices historically at the margins. Using co-ministry as your lens, listen to the following suggestions of the Commission on Institutional Change for moving us away from some of the identified characteristics of white supremacy culture. Moving away from individualism and toward collaboration and delegation. Disrupting finding progress in bigger is better results and concentrating instead on quality and process. Instead of searching for objectivity, valuing diverse worldviews. Allowing power hierarchies to give way to power sharing. Replacing defensiveness that flows from a fear of being wrong with a secure knowledge of one's fallibility. Displacing the sacrosanctity of the written word with an honoring of varied ways of self-expression. Rather than striving toward perfectionism, embracing a culture of appreciation, shifting from either-or thinking to thinking both and, instead of fearing conflict and desiring comfort, recognizing that conflict is necessary and that growth requires discomfort, and getting off the merry-go-round of urgency to allow for realistic work plans and timetables. Co-ministry is a bold move in the direction of dismantling legacies of white supremacy culture. If we agree to this experiment, Reverend Virginia and I will covenant with one another, as a staff, with the board, and with all of you, to stay in communication, to gather impressions as we go, and to learn as we lead. We will strive to be a pastoral team encouraging leadership among you all, for co-ministry will only thrive with your participation. There is risk involved in this journey, but as our chalice lighting words remind us, not to dare is to lose one's self. In taking this trip together, we stand a good chance of rediscovering us along the way. So we'll need to guard against being so goal-oriented about destinations that we get ahead of ourselves. There is a story of an archaeologist in Peru who hired some local guides, descendants of the Inca, whose ancient site deep in the mountains was the destination. After they had been moving through dense vegetation over steep terrain for some time, suddenly the locals stopped, declaring they would go no further. The archaeologists grew very impatient and soon became angry for what could be the problem. Had he not hired them to take him all the way to the site? But no matter how much he cajoled, they would not proceed. Then, as suddenly as they had stopped in their tracks, the guides gathered up the gear and set off once more toward the site destination. The bewildered archaeologists asked why they had stopped and refused to move for so long. The lead guide answered, "We had been moving too fast and had to wait for our souls to catch up." We are setting off on a journey together, and I hope we'll take our time checking with one another along the way, making sure we don't get ahead of our souls, that we don't lose sight of connection with those essential qualities that make us us. When we travel in covenanted community, the communion at the heart of who we are is revealed, and we touch the something more that holds us together as if with loving arms. We become greater than a collection of individuals. We become a people, an us, with the power of we. Ultimately, my ministry is propelled in the first place by glimpses of the whole, the prospective power of creating together something larger than the sum of the parts. Rebecca Parker, one of UU's most prominent theological thinkers and poets, writes, "There is a love holding us. There is a love holding all that we love. There is a love holding all. We rest in this love." My prayer for us is that whatever our destination, we will have packed well for the journey, taking along those qualities we treasure, perhaps leaving behind attitudes that keep us lodged in unproductive patterns, that we will move at a covenanted pace, keeping us attached to our souls, to the values and dreams that are ours alone, and that we will arrive wherever our congregational aspiration leads us, fully ourselves, newly inspired by the journey, at a place of our own, where we rest in a love that holds us all, and that the power of we, that more than expansiveness, finds its expression in our very being, together. May it be so.